Continuing in our study of Job, we'll finish the book of Job today, and I'll just read again the short overview that I read last week of the book of Job. It's about a righteous man who suffered great affliction through no fault of his own. He displayed humility, patience, perseverance, and faithfulness during great suffering without sinning and was rewarded by God. And I do not know the author. I don't know that anyone does, but very likely, if we had to take a guess, probably Job himself. But I don't think we know. I don't know. So in any case, we got to about chapter 3 last week, about where he had already been afflicted. And we're told that he did not sin with his lips in the loss of all of his property, his family, and the fact that his wife also turned on him. And then he had three, and I'll put this in quotation mark, friends who came from afar and met to grieve with him, apparently. And so we'll talk about that today in chapter 4 through 37. We have all this discourse. Now chapter 3, and you know, realize we'll just have to speak in general terms about most of this, but in chapter 3, Job wishes basically that he had never been born and curses the day he was born. And can you remember maybe as a child or a youngster being very discouraged or something really went wrong and you wish you'd never been born, or telling your parents, why did you ever have me, or some statement like that? I see people smiling, so I think maybe you can remember. I can. We hear kids sometimes say, I wish I'd never been born. Well, here's Job, a grown man, but things have gone so bad for him that he says the same thing. And the thing about we need to remember too through all this book is, and especially this discourse between Job and his friends, and actually there were four of them, not just three. There were three, and then Elihu speaks last, and he's much younger apparently than all the rest of them, but the thing we need to remember is that both Job and these four men really had no idea that Satan was behind all this. They thought all this affliction was from God. And we know God allowed it, but God did not initiate it. It was not God's thought to do this to Job for no reason. And so as we see them speaking, they talk of God. Job talks of, why have you deserted me? Or if you'll just talk to me, or things like this. And as far as I can tell through reading all through this several times, he has no idea that Satan is actually behind it. And we also need to remember that Job's friends, the main overall thought of what they had to say was, well, Job, you sinned. It wouldn't happen to you if you hadn't sinned. You have to repent if you want this to go away. And God will make it go away, but he's bringing this on you because you have sinned. And so that's their main theme throughout the whole book. Okay, in chapter 4, Eliphaz begins in chapter 4. I want to look at verse 7 through 9. Remember, and he's speaking to Job, remember now, whoever perished being innocent? Or where were the upright ever cut off? Even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his anger they are consumed. Well, maybe Eliphaz, I don't know how old he was, he may not have been very old either, but he should have known that innocent people do perish. They perish along with the wicked at times. yes, we're, Solomon tells us that if we live righteously, we will probably live a longer life. But he also said time and chance happen to all men. And the innocent are at times troubled or killed along with those who are wicked. But his thought here is, again, you've done something wrong, Job. And all four of these men seem to me in reading through this, that they seem to elevate themselves in their own eyes the longer they talk. The more they have to say to Job, the more they think they know. And much of what they say is true, but they mix a lot of foolishness with it because they just don't know. They are supposing things as they speak to Job, and that's mixed with some facts that they do know and that are true.
Right.
Yes.
On that point, I've thought about that. These were his friends, what they call friends.
Right.
So I guess they were acquainted.
Yes.
They were acquainted. So, no doubt, Job being the righteous person we know he was, he's probably talked to them. So they've had a chance to know and discuss these things, I guess. But they missed part. They missed something. And they're going, you know, they're just taking it. Like you said, they just, the farther they go, the deeper in they get.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I understand this as they came from their homes. They set a time to meet. We know that at Job's, where he was at, what was left of his place, and then we know they sat for 7 days in the dust and didn't say anything. So I take this to be the first time they had spoke.
I thought they came from quite a ways away.
They did.
Yeah,
yeah, they did.
I don't know that they would have spoken.
Well, the three had some kind of communication, obviously, and they would have known this all happened to Job, or they wouldn't have went in the first place. And so we've got an element of time there also. We don't know how long, and that's something else I want to talk about. And you might think about this. I'll give you a hint here, or I'll give you a thought. How long did all this affliction last? Okay, well, I've got a couple of verses that give us an idea. We'll get to it in a minute. Okay, let's go on to chapter 5 and verse 8. In this chapter, Eliphaz is telling Job that he's being disciplined by God. He's receiving his punishment. And in verse 8, he's speaking, "But as for me..." See there, he's elevating himself. "But as for me, I would seek God, and to God I would commit my cause." On and on and on. And then he extols the virtues of God, which are true. But he's insinuating that Job has not done this. He's insinuating that Job has not been righteous, when we know that he has. And Job knew that he had also. And Job was absolutely determined that he would not change his mindset, because he knew he had been righteous, and he just didn't know why these things happened.
So what nationality were they? Were they attached to a nation? Or?
Well, yeah, we're told who they... Are you talking about his friends or Job also? Well, Job was from the land of Uz, which James brought a map to me after class last week. I had said, and I don't know for sure, but that it was south of Palestine, near the Sabaeans and the Chaldeans, because that's who raided and killed his family and stole everything. But this map shows it north of Jerusalem area. So I really don't know, but they were from the east. You know, they were, we might call them Oriental today. Job was called the wisest man of the east. So they were, at the very least, in the general vicinity of Palestine, what we call the Holy Land, Ben.
Well, I think it also depends on when this book was written. You know, if the book is written pre-flood, then you don't really have those divisions of nations yet.
Yeah.
I'm not certain that it's written pre-flood. It'll be post-flood.
Well, we know that the nations were divided because chapter 2, verse 11, it describes Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite, and then Elihu is also given his nation, or his genealogy is given later on. There were at least tribes, if not nations. All right, let's move on. So there in verse 5 and or chapter 5 and verse 8, I would say that Eliphaz is seeing himself as wiser than Job, maybe. As for me, Job, I would do this. Verse 17 kind of goes along with that. He says, "Behold, happy is the man whom God corrects. Therefore, do not despise the chastening of the Almighty." He's kind of speaking to him like you're my son, or I'm a father figure to you, Job. And you know that you're not supposed to despise chastening of God. Well, that's not what this was. But of course, what else would they think? What else would we think?
He's almost insinuating when he says, "Well, as for me, I would seek God."
Right.
It's almost like saying, "You're not seeking God."
Right. Right. Something's wrong, Job, and you're the one at fault. Okay, in answer to what I said just a few minutes ago about how long this affliction may have occurred, I've got a couple passages here. Let's look at chapter 7, verse 3 through 5, and also chapter 29, verse 2. This is when Job is speaking here, and he says in 7 and 3, "So I have been allotted months of futility, and wearisome nights have been appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, 'When shall I arise and the night be ended?' For I have had my fill of tossing till dawn. My flesh is caked with worms and dust. My skin is cracked and breaks out afresh." Okay, so we have this word in verse 3 of months. And there are times that months, days, and years are used figuratively in the Old Testament. But I think this is literal. Look at chapter 29, verse 2. Job is saying, "Oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God watched over me." And talks about how things were great before all this happened to him. And when you look at the whole timeline of Job's life, okay, we know that he had 10 children before this happened. So let's suppose he was 20 before he had his first child. And let's suppose that his wife had 10 children in the space of 15 years, maybe. Okay, maybe he's 35 when this came on. We don't know. But for a short period of time, I'm thinking this probably occurred in less than a year, this whole affliction. And then we know at the end, he lived to see four generations. Probably, we know that he lived 140 years after all this, so he probably didn't die till he was 175 at the very least. Maybe close to 200.
His children gathered together.
Four generations.
No, in the beginning of the book.
Oh.
His children gathered together.
Right.
In the house.
They were grown in their own houses. Yeah, so he's probably even older than 35. He's probably almost as old as you, Ben.
Well, I think he's older than that.
Yeah, I think he is too.
I think he's probably...
I think it's safe to say when he died, he was at least 175, probably close to 200. But in any case, I think these two scriptures give us at least I think... this is a literal meaning, this months of sometime, probably less than a year. But And how long could he actually survive in this condition? I mean, at some point in time, his body's going to completely break down and he would die. He was so miserable. All right, let's move on. Chapter 8. Bildad now begins. Number 2 friend. And chapter 8, verse 3 through 6. Would someone read that, please?
Does God subvert judgment? Or does the Almighty pervert justice? If your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. If you had earnestly seek God and make your supplication to the Almighty, if you were pure and upright, surely now he would await for you and prosper your rightful dwelling place.
Okay, so now not only, Bildad says, not only Job, you've probably sinned, but probably your sons have sinned too. It's probably just your whole family. And so that's, he continues the same line of thought of repentance for sin. All right, let's move on. We've got to keep going here. Chapter 11, verse 13 through 15. Someone please read that. And this is so far the number 3 friend. Chapter 11, 13 through 15.
If you were prepared your heart and stretch out your hand towards him, if iniquity were in your hand and you put it far away, and would not let wickedness dwell in your tents, then surely you could lift up your face without spot. Yes, you could be steadfast and not fear.
All right. Same line of thought here. And they're all sitting around listening to what each other has to say, and so they're probably kind of feeding off each other. Okay, and after each one of these, as you know, Job responds to each lecture he gets from his friends. And in chapter 13, verses 20 through 24, Job seems to be very low at this point in time. And this seems to be a prayer directly toward to God, not so much a response to his friends. He says, "Only two things do not do to me, then I will not hide myself from you. Withdraw your hand far from me, and let not the dread of you make me afraid. Then call, and I will answer, or let me speak, then you respond to me. How many are my iniquities and sins? Make me know my transgression and my sin. Why do you hide your face and regard me as your enemy?" So he's thinking, if I have sinned, tell me what it is. Please communicate with me. And up to this point, God had not communicated to him.
So it seems to be a little change in his attitude.
Yeah, it seems to me that maybe this is a weak time for Job. You know, we all go through highs and lows, and maybe this is a weak point. We're going to get to what I think is really the best part of the whole book here in a few minutes. Okay, then in chapter 20, Zophar likens or even accuses Job of being a wicked man. Not that he's just sinned, but that he's wicked. Maybe that would indicate more of a life of sin. And we're not going to really read anything there, but here's Job's response. Chapter 21 is Job's response to being accused of wickedness. And then the very last verse of chapter 21, verse 34, "How can you comfort me with empty words since falsehood remains in your answers?" He accuses Zophar of actually lying. So Zophar's not being much of a friend, is he?
That's true. Job that he was wicked, surely all he has to do is just do a little research with the neighbors and find out how much Job's helped everybody.
Yeah. And it talks about how generous Job was to those who were poor and those who needed his help.
And goes with that other character that accused his kids of being sinful. Look how Job prayed for his kids and offered sacrifices. So those would have been covered God's standards.
And chapter 22, Eliphaz also accuses Job of being wicked. In chapter 26, we see Job speaking of God's, he praises God's power and majesty through his creation. And in this chapter, we learn a few things about creation as we were studying Wednesday night in Genesis. And by the way, I think when I led off Wednesday night talking about Genesis covering a time period of about 4,000 years, I think that's incorrect. What I was thinking about was creation to Jesus was about 4,000 years. To the flood was about a little less than 2,000. Of course, Genesis goes far beyond the flood, but in big terms, if you think of creation to the flood as 2,000, the flood to Christ 2,000, and to Christ to now another 2,000. But the book of Genesis, I think, is more in the area of 2750 to 3,000 years, something like that. Because then I got to thinking later on, well, in the old, we have the kings, we have the judges for 450 years and all of that. And that was, David lived approximately 1,000 years before Christ. So Genesis is not 4,000 years, but up to approximately 26. Job gives a great discourse here about the majesty of God and his creation. And then to me is the highlight of the book, one of the things we can learn the most, that I can at least learn from this book the most, is chapter 27, verses 2 through 12. This to me is when Job really digs his heels in and absolutely is determined he will be righteous. He will not give in to his friends, his wife, or anything. He will only serve God and put him first. Let's start in verse 1. Moreover, Job continued his discourse and said, "As God lives, who has taken away my justice, and the Almighty, who has made my soul bitter," he still thinks it came from God, "as long as my breath is in me, and the breath of God is in my nostrils, my lips will not speak wickedness, nor my tongue utter deceit. Far be it from me that I should say, 'You are right,'" or in other words, speaking of his friends, "I'm not going to give in to what you say. Till I die, I will not put away my integrity from me. My righteousness I hold fast and will not let it go. My heart shall not reproach me as long as I live." That is faith and determination right there. He is not going to give in to what those around him think.
So all of this that God allowed Satan to do was for Job's benefit.
Yeah.
Because he's even got more righteous, probably, closer to him.
Yeah. And then remember, he's speaking to his friends here. Let's go to verse 11. "I will teach you about the hand of God. What is with the Almighty I will not conceal. Surely all of you have seen it. Why then do you behave with complete nonsense?" What are you acting like this for? It's nonsense. So to me, that's Job is very strong at this point in time. Okay, I won't go into it, but chapter 28 gives us great information about wisdom, what it is, and how to get it. Chapter 29, I got to really move here. Chapter 29 through 31, Job summarizes his pitiful condition, that God has deserted him, or at least ignores him, and is praying for God to speak to him. He summarizes his past life, how he was, things were so great, he had respect among the people, and now they spit on him. They won't even speak to him, they won't even look at him because of his pitiful state. Okay, then we have Elihu, after the three older friends have spoken. Chapter 32, Elihu he speaks. And we see in verse 6, he says, I am young in years and you are very old. Very old? How old was he? He wasn't all that old, was he? But to Elihu, he was. Therefore, I was afraid and dared not declare my opinion to you. I said age should speak and multitude of years should teach wisdom. On and on. And so the longer he talks, the more great swelling words he spits out, proclaiming his great knowledge in chapter 33, verses 1 through 7. Verse 3, my words come from my upright heart, and my lips utter pure knowledge. Okay. And so he goes on. He mixes truth with foolishness. In chapter 36, verses 5 and 6. Behold, God is mighty, but despises no one. That's true. He is mighty in strength of understanding. He does not preserve the life of the wicked, but gives justice to the oppressed. That's all true. But then chapter 37, look at verse 23 and 24. He really sticks it to Job here. As for the Almighty, we cannot find him. He is excellent in power and judgment and abundant justice. He does not oppress. Therefore, men fear him. He shows no partiality to any who are wise of heart. And I think this is a direct poke at Job, because Job was a wise man. He was the greatest man of the whole country. His opinion was sought by all. And I think this was a real... Elihu was really sticking it at him. Well, a curious thought is that Job does not even respond to Elihu. At least it's not recorded. And neither does God later on. He responds to the original three, and he's angry with them. But Elihu's not even mentioned after this. And maybe this is just because maybe they're cutting him some slack because he's so young. Who knows?
Well, don't you think he probably said more things right than the rest of them?
He did say a lot of correct things, yes. He did. And he did say great things about God and his majesty. But he didn't understand, just like the rest of them didn't understand. And so, in any case, he's not even mentioned throughout the rest of the book. Okay. Chapter 38, 39, and 40 is when God does finally speak to Job. And how does he do that? There in the first verse of 38.
A whirlwind.
Well, this is a curious thing. It's used in other times, passages in the Bible, when God is present. Did it mean that the other men could not hear what he said to Job? Did it just mean that it was